13 minutes past 9 o'clock. Welcome back to Radio Islam International. As you just heard the promo, this is a brand new slot where we will be having three segments in our two-hour programs. Previously, we would dedicate the entire two-hour program to Muftis, who will be discussing basic fiqh programs. But inshallah, from today onwards and on a weekly basis, Mufti Muhammad Hafiji from Jamiatul Ulama, South Africa's Economic and Finance Desk, will be joining us. And as Mufti Hafiji used to have his previous slot with Sister Anisa on Sunday mornings, and even before that, if we track back, Mufti Hafiji used to do the program, a Taji program, on Tuesday mornings. So inshallah, on that same sequence and same pattern, he will be discussing various money matters and conscious consumer segments that we're going to have just after 9 p.m. every Monday evenings. So my engineer indicates to me we do have Mufti Muhammad Hafiji on the line. Mufti Sahab, assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah.
Wa alaikum salam wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh, Mawlana Sahib, and to all the listeners of Radio Islam International, and Jazakallah for having me.
Jazakallah khairan for availing yourself, Mufti Sahib. How are you this evening?
Alhamdulillah, through Allah Ta'ala's grace and mercy, your du'as, Mawlana, all okay, nothing to complain about.
MashaAllah, subhanahu wa ta'ala, always keep you happy. Mufti Sahib, the Competition Commission has gazetted draft guidelines that will give motorists a wide range of options on where to service their vehicles. Tell us more regarding giving small car service and repair operators a chance.
Yes, Mawlana, you know, I'm not too sure if you're aware of this, but currently, owners of new motor vehicles in South Africa are actually unique in the world for being locked into using a vehicle manufacturer's service centers, repair shops, and parts with embedded motor or service plan. Mm. So if they decide to use an independent service or repair provider of their choice, the vehicle manufacturers basically void those warranties, whether it be a maintenance plan or a service plan of some sort. Mm. So to me as well, I found this surprising that it's unique to South Africa and many other parts of the world. This level of restrictions do not apply to motor vehicle owners who drive or purchase a particularly new motor vehicle. Mm. Now, the Competition Commission has announced new guidelines for car services and repairs, and consumers tend to win big. The Competition Commission basically has gazetted draft guidelines that seek to put an end to motorists being forced to have their in-warranty cars serviced or repaired only at manufacturer-approved service dealerships under the threat of having their warranties cancelled. Mm. Now, according to the media that is out in consumer columns, the guidelines prepared in terms of the Competition Act provide very practical guidance to firms in the automotive sector on conduct that may be anti-competitive and encourage competition through greater participation of small businesses and probably historically disadvantaged groups. So a finalized set of guidelines will be implemented as part of the Competition Act and will give authorities the power to pursue any anti-competitive behavior through enforcement of these guidelines. So in another major boon for consumers, the guidelines also state that vehicle manufacturers and approved dealers must allow consumers to fit non-original parts where the specific parts warranty has expired without voiding the balance of the motor vehicle's warranty. Hmm. So this I think many individuals who may be owning new motor vehicles or any motor vehicle that has an existing motor plan or service plan, maintenance plan, whatever it is, maybe a breath of fresh air in terms of some leeway to adopt a smaller enterprise for servicing purposes. I know there is a whole issue about when the vehicle is touched by anyone else other than the approved dealership, then it tends to compromise the level of service that it receives. There may be merit to that, but I think the purpose of this particular move by the Competition Commission is basically geared towards creating space or some room for smaller enterprises to survive and thrive in a very difficult market. So I was just reading that there's an organization, Section 21, a non-profit organization called Right to Repair South Africa, which has been advocating for freedom of repair choice for vehicle owners for several years now, and they've obviously welcomed this move by the Competition Commission. So yes, this may be, there may be pros and cons to the whole move, But it is noteworthy to see the Competition Commission flexing its muscles a bit in terms of practices, commercial practices, which are of benefit to smaller enterprises and provide a more a viable opportunity for smaller businesses to enter what I refer to as a rather difficult market to operate in.
Muftisa, also it's becoming increasingly difficult for employers to escape basic conditions of Employment Act.
Yes, Mona, you know, when it comes to employment issues, there's so much to be said. I don't think we'll ever have sufficiently emphasized on the need to focus on employee rights or even employee duty towards the employer. But be that as it may, for now, we're just focusing on the basic conditions of Employment Act of 1997, where you find that there are various aspects. If you just search the internet for basic elements of the conditions of Employment Act, you'll find that there are very basic elements that need to be covered when it comes to the employment contract, whether it's working time, issues of overtime, issues of meal times, you know, maybe tea times, or issues of working on a weekend, leave, maternity leave. So much can be said, and there's so much of guidance in terms of what needs to be covered. I think for employers, it's really better towards a scenario where employers are, it's going to be rather difficult for employers to escape the basic conditions of Employment Act. And I'm saying this because in this week, we saw a very large retailer being fined quite hefty for not abiding to the Basic Conditions of Employment Act. This was the retail brand Spa. They were fined almost 12 million rand for not fulfilling very basic conditions of employment. And I'll just give you a specific example that made the headline so that listeners can reflect and employers can reflect into the kind of conduct that is unfolding in the market and which can be problematic. So in this particular example, we are informed of the retail outlet even requiring its own its employees to bring their own tea and coffee to work. Now, it may sound funny and laughable, but in terms of the eyes of the law, it didn't make sense for the retailer to be demanding extensive hours from its employees and at the same time making stipulations of this sort that the employees have to bring along their own tea and coffee. So, as I say, it sounds laughable, but in the eyes of the law, it was a very strict matter and something that it is for all of the law. So, I must emphasize that employers, it's important to engage themselves around some of the very basic conditions of the employment contract, because many a time you find that we often perceive them to be just pieces of legislation, but within them there are fairly Islamic values entrenched in some of those pieces of legislation. There's nothing untoward in saying clarify how many hours the individual needs to work, clarify what will the compensation be, what will overtime pay entail. All of those issues are in sync and in line with the Islamic requirements of an employment contract. Therefore, it is important and of crucial significance for employers to take note of some of the basic requirements of an employment contract and not perceive them as pieces of legislation which are un-Islamic, so to say. As I say, they may contain elements which are conducive for the overall contract and may improve and enhance the overall relationship between an employer and an employee.
22 minutes past 9 o'clock, you are listening to our FIQH program, weekly FIQH program, and as we just mentioned, this program is categorized into three segments. Various muftis will come in the first hour. In the second hour, just from after 9 p.m., Mufti Muhammad Hafiji will be, inshallah, covering money on Monday with Conscious Consumer, and he will be discussing that, and then later we'll conclude with Shafi FIQH. So we go for our ad break. When we return, we'll continue with Mufti Muhammad Hafiji. Saifuji. 27 minutes past 9 o'clock. Welcome back to Radio Islam International on the segment Money on Monday with Mufti Muhammad Haifuji, and we're discussing, or we're having the segment Conscious Consumer. So far, Mufti Haifuji discussed with regards to some guidelines that will give motorists a wide range of options on where to service their vehicles, and also regarding employers to escape basic conditions of employment act. It's becoming increasingly difficult. So as we mentioned at the beginning of the program, that every week Mufti Muhammad Haifuji will join us on this segment of Money on Monday. Welcome back, Mufti Sab. With regards to pilchards and the law of unintended consequences, that we heard that the National Consumer Commission is reportedly still in the dark and has not been informed about West Point Processors' announcement for the recall of certain tins of 400 grams pilchards of tomato sauce due to the canned product being unfit for human consumption. So tell us regarding that, and we also see there's a small chance that consumers could fall ill due to the problem. Representative of the company said that the 400 grams cans of pilchards in tomato sauce, which are sold under the Checkers, ShopRite and OK House brands, have been recalled. So regarding that, tell us more, Mufti.
Yes, Marana, you know, in this week, the consumer columns and consumers in general were hit with a very big surprise with a recall of some pilchards products. Now, I just want to seize the opportunity to educate our consumers about a very important concept within economics, and this is the issue of consequences, because the issue of the law of unintended consequences is something that prevails in economic theory in many ways, and the example of the pilchards recall is just one of them. So maybe we'll go straight into it. I'm not too sure if many consumers are aware of the fact that it is not all pilchards brands that have been affected. So South Africa's biggest selling tin pilchards brand, Lucky Star, is one of those that are not affected by the recall. And it just so happens that mass consumer confusion has hit the company so hard that jobs of its canary employees could be on the line. Now, if you look at it, this is a classic case of the law of unintended consequences, where you find in the specific example of Lucky Star, their cannery in St. Helena Bay and Lightleck on the Cape West Coast employ more than 2,500 workers. Now, we should not look at this as 2,500 workers. These are, in essence, 2,500 families, because those workers are just one individual from each household who may be feeding a few mouths. So the recall has been so severe, and the disaster has been so deep for the company itself. Although in principle they're not affected by the recall, consumer perception is that all cultures are a problem, and as a result, all cultures are being so-called boycotted or even abstained from. Now, when it comes to the law of unintended consequences, you see here a case of, on the one hand, you have the recall, on the other hand, the perception of the consumers which is likely that people's jobs could be on the line. So this is obviously consumers don't absorb or take in information correctly. You find that it can lead to unintended consequences, and I suppose this rule applies in general when it comes to the pervasiveness of social media. You find that so many messages go around and are circulated at once, and without even verifying, to such an extent that it could have an impact where we don't even realize that there are very severe consequences to our simple forwarding of a message. Be that as it may, I just want to highlight and educate our consumers on the whole issue of the law of unintended consequences within economics. So I'll just give one or two examples here. Let's say, for example, the government has an issue with tenancy and landlords leasing out their properties at very high and exorbitant rates. So suddenly they decide to pass a law, and the law states that anyone who owns a property or any landlord cannot charge a rental exceeding a specific rate. So they have a maximum, they'll have a ceiling of rates for any landlord to charge a tenant. So on the one hand, the policy will be formed, it will seem very nice, and the whole idea behind it will be that consumers or ordinary tenants will be protected from paying overly or excessive rental rates. But on the other hand, the unintended consequence is that landlords will refrain from actually putting out their property for rental. They will prefer to utilize their property in another way, which is more of greater economic benefit, purely because the issue of renting out the property is being regulated so in such a stiff manner that they cannot make excessive profits. So on the one hand, you find that the government will institute this policy to curb excessive rental rates and make sure there's more housing available at an affordable rate. But on the other hand, you'll find the unintended consequence is that landlords will refrain from putting their properties on the market purely because of the profit motive being hampered in some way or the other. So they seek alternate measures of utilizing their properties or deriving economic gain on their properties. A similar example is the issue of social security. So when the state passes a policy that or implements a policy that individuals above a specific age will be able to benefit from a social grant of some sort. On the one hand, it sounds very noble, or the intention is noble, that it will support individuals who are indigent and require assistance. But on the other hand, the unintended consequence is that more people tend to lean on social grants and stay away from productive work, purely with the intention of sitting back home and deriving a healthy sum of money from the state. So this is how the law of unintended consequences plays a role in economics. There are many, many examples of this particular law and how it affects policy making. But for now, I just suffice on how the purchase recall has some kind of unintended consequence, in the sense that on the one hand, there are specific companies that are not affected by the recall, but they too are affected, and in the unintended consequence is that individuals could potentially lose their jobs as a result of this. Remember that the recall is so severe, so large scale, that it will take, the market will take time to recover, and for a while, for a good few months, ordinary consumers will refrain from consuming the product out of fear that that something could happen, and as a result, ordinary individuals who were not meant to be subjected to this recall may potentially lose their jobs.
Mufti Saab, you also have a series of seven parts with regards to a back-to-basics approach to analyzing the health of a company. But before we come to that, more consideration required at till points.
Yes, there's this one consumer practice that is prevailing on some of the columns that I'm going through. And it's the issue relating to supermarket experiences where when you check out, you find that there are express till points and then there are the non-express till points. The express till points are meant for individuals who have less than, say, 10 or 15 items. And it's meant to be a queue where ordinary customers are processed a bit faster as a result of having less items. But it just so happens that they're being put out among some journalists that you find many consumers have this habit of having more than the stipulated amount of items according to the rule book, but still insist on utilizing those checkout points, and in the process it tends to hold back the entire or defeat the whole purpose of having an express checkout till point. So for me, I just think it's a human instinct. It's part of being a Muslim and a mu'min to consider the well-being or the comfort of others. Overall, the adherence to rules is something that as a community, as a society, we are becoming very averse to. We basic rules of the road or basic rules of how society should function are not adhered to, basic etiquette. And one of them is the issue of supermarket checkout points, where there are specific rules. If a person has less than a specific number of items, by all means, you can utilize those checkout points for your transactions to be processed much faster and therefore greater efficiencies to be achieved. But if ordinary individuals don't abide by the rules, obviously we can have the best of systems in place, but it will defeat, those systems will fail to work and fail to yield positive or desired results purely because of human inconsistency or aspect of impatience within ordinary customers or patrons of supermarkets.
Finally, Jim, I'll carry on. Mufti Mohammed?
Yes, I'm
Jai, finally, before we let you go, back to basics approach to analyzing the health of a company. I believe you have 7 parts to that. Can you tell us the first part?
Yes, Marana, you know, there are very specific terminologies that prevail in the world of finance and economics. Many a time they seem very overwhelming and many individuals just switch off. I think I just want to utilize this opportunity to go through some key concepts that we hear about, but often fail to understand or comprehend these basic concepts. I just want to start off by saying that all companies that are listed on the Johannesburg Stock Exchange are required to issue financial results twice in a year, interim results and annual results, right? Yeah. Now, on the news, you'll often hear these words that I'm going to talk about in this series. And the key here towards unpacking these terms so that we understand them and embrace how they operate within a market. So they may sound very overwhelming, but in essence, very simple, ordinary ratios that are calculated to indicate the health of a company. So for today, I'm sure time is running out. I'll just go through the issue of what we hear about in the name of headline earnings, ordinary share. And it's a very common news item in mainstream media when they report on the performance or equity and the stock market. They talk about headline earnings per share being up or down. And then ordinary individuals who are not in that market tend to perceive this as something very high-flying. Indeed, it may be for those individuals who are high flyers in the finance and corporate world, but they are very simple concepts, and by virtue of wanting to educate each other, I thought we'd address these key concepts. So the first one we're talking about today is headline earnings per ordinary share. In very simple terms, headline earnings per ordinary share basically means how much money has the company made for shareholders. So for you, Monana Sohail, as an individual who may have purchased some shares, you obviously want to know how much money has the company made for you as a shareholder of a particular company. So you look at the headline earnings per ordinary share. This is the ratio that will give you an indication of, or it's one of the indicators of the overall health of the company. The figure is very simple, and it's represented by taking the profit of the business and by dividing by the number of ordinary shares in the issue. Both to represent this issue, it's not difficult. All the individual needs to do is go to the newspaper and find maybe say the interim results or annual results of the company that you got shares in, and the issues of the profit and the number of shares issue will all be published for public consumption. If it is available, you as an individual shareholder will take the profit of the business, divide it by the number of ordinary shares in issue, it will give you a headline earnings per ordinary share, and it will give you an indication of how much money has the company made for you as an ordinary shareholder.
Yes.
Now, I think I want to end off by saying that the reason why headline earnings per ordinary share is an important aspect and why it matters is because apart from stating how much the company has earned for you, a comparison to last year's earnings will indicate if the company is growing or not growing. So in essence, if you want to compare last year to this year, one of the elements you look at is the headline earnings per ordinary share. Is it up or down from last year to this year? If it is up, it basically means that the company is making some money for shareholders, I guess.
Indeed, very fascinating and interesting. Mr. Muhammad Effigy, we say Jazakallahu Khairan for availing yourself. Inshallah, we hope to speak to you and listen to your advices next week, Monday, just after 9 p.m.